Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is side two of For the Record program number 423, titled, I've Got a Secret, Update on September 11th and Related Matters. This is being recorded on September 8th of 2003. Before I get into the main body of the second side of the broadcast, let me remind you that sister station WFMU, the heroic WFMU right across the river from Ground Zero in Jersey City, New Jersey, WFMU is archiving the For the Record programs on Real Audio. More recent programs are streaming at WFMU.org/Dave Emery. Older programs are available for download only at a longer URL linked to both the WFMU.org/Dave Emery website and also to the Real Audio Equipped Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com. In the For the Record section of the Spitfire website, you can read long, annotated, detailed descriptions of the For the Record programs. There are also written descriptions of all of the broadcasts and lectures that I've done over the years, and they are all available from Spitfire. You can reach Spitfire at P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005. You can email them at mail, M-A-I-L, at spitfirelist.com, one word, S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E-L-I-S-T.com. And once again, visit their Real Audio Equipped Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com. I do not get any money whatsoever from the Spitfire arrangement. Also be aware that WFMU is in the process of restoring the websites. They had some computer problems. The download website is now back up. The streaming Real Audio website will be functional, I'm told, within a relatively short period of time. So for those who have inquired about the programs that are unavailable on the streaming website, those will be available before too much longer. They simply had some computer problems. Now, turning to the basic topic of this broadcast, and again, it takes its title from an old jive quiz show called I've Got a Secret, much as For the Record's 403 and 409 took their title, Let's Make a Deal, Parts 1 and 2, from another old jive quiz show on television by that name. So too, I've Got a Secret could refer to George Bush and company. And in fact, he appears to have quite a few secrets, and some of those secrets are beginning to leak out. Among the secrets that he's attempting to keep concerns the terrorist financing list, the list of individuals and institutions financing terrorism. And we're going to revisit the Altaqua connections and update a very compelling aspect of the Altaqua connections before too much longer. The following is from the Yahoo website, the Yahoo News website. This is by Ken Guggenheim, an Associated Press writer. It's datelined August 5th of 2003, and this was just 11 minutes before this was posted on the Yahoo website. It's titled, Government Won't Release Terror Financing List. It's datelined Washington, and it reads in part, The Treasury Department rejected a request from senators Tuesday and refused to release a classified list of Saudi individuals or organizations suspected of financing terrorist groups. A Treasury spokesman, Rob Nichols, said a department official misspoke when he told senators last week the list was unclassified, which would mean it was not restricted information. Quote, The last thing we want to do is tip off terrorists that we are onto them, Nichols said, again quoting, We don't want to disrupt ongoing investigations, covert actions, or potential law enforcement actions, unquote. Administration attorneys are reviewing the degree to which the classified information can be provided or shared with Congress in closed session, said a government official speaking on condition of anonymity. The refusal to release the list marks the second time in 2 weeks that the Bush administration has rejected requests by senators to declassify information about Saudi ties to terrorists. And I think arguably the most important aspect of the September 11th investigation involves the funding sources, and as I indicated inside one, as I've spoken about so many times in various broadcasts, among those is the Al-Taqwa milieu, not only linked to the Muslim Brotherhood, not only linked to Hamas, not only linked allegedly to Al-Qaeda, but also, as we have seen, and for the records 413 and 417, and as we're going to see again in a few minutes, also linked to some of the expatriate capital that helped to finance Saddam Hussein's machinations of various kinds as well. The evidentiary tributaries running out from the Al-Taqwa milieu go far and wide. They go back in time to the Third Reich. Yousef Nada allegedly worked as a Third Reich intelligence agent. As we looked at in For the Record 416, he was alleged in an Asia Times article to have helped to actually effect the escape of the Grand Mufti from Germany to the Middle East at the end of World War II. The Al-Taqwa complex also runs through the Banco del Gottardo, the Swiss subsidiary of the Banco Ambrosiano that we've looked at so many times in connection with the P2 milieu, the Vatican financial scandals, and that we're going to be revisiting once again in an update on the P2. For the Banco Ambrosiano investigation has now been reopened, or the inquiry into the death of Roberto Calvi has now been reopened. Banco del Gottardo, one of the institutions inextricably linked with Al-Taqwa, is the Swiss subsidiary of the Banco Ambrosiano. Yousef Nada's attorney, Perfelice Barchi, a law partner of Carla Del Ponte, currently overseeing the war crimes trial of Slobodan Milosevic. Perfelice Barchi is not only Yousef Nada's attorney, but he also handles the legal work for the Swiss investments of Silvio Berlusconi, former P2 member, currently Prime Minister of Italy. The Al-Taqwa milieu also overlaps heavily the Republican Ethnic Outreach Organization, and in fact, as we've looked at in, among other programs, For the Record 356, For the Records 357, 8, and 9, and number 415, the Republican Ethnic Outreach Organization, political and business associates of George Bush, and people such as Grover Norquist and Karl Rove helped to precipitate that particular Muslim and Islamist branch of the Republican Ethnic Outreach Organization. So when you're looking at Al-Taqwa, you are looking at something. You're looking at something that washes on many shores and which could produce a storm of enormous potential. Speaking of Al-Taqwa, and I guess you may have guessed that that was what was coming up next. Financial Times, Thursday, August 21st of 2003, has the following article by Marianne Brun-Rovet, that's B-R-U-N hyphen R-O-V-E-T, and Edward Alden in Washington. It's headlined, Saudi-backed charities, quote, aided terrorists, unquote. This article reads in part as follows. Now, a couple of the names here, the BMI company, based in Jersey City, and Solomon Bihari, B-I-H-E-I-R-I, BMI's founder. And not only the links here, the alleged links to Al-Taqwa and to the Muslim World League, to Al-Qaeda, excuse me, and the Muslim World League, but as we're going to see, there are also evidentiary tributaries running in the direction of the Al-Taqwa milieu and Yousef Nada. The article reads in part, a group of Saudi-backed Islamic charities operating in the U.S. gave material support to terrorists linked with Al-Qaeda and Hamas, the U.S. government has alleged for the first time. The allegations concerning the Muslim World League and an affiliate, the International Islamic Relief Organization, are likely to reignite concerns about Saudi Arabia's possible role in funding terrorist organizations. The two charities are at the center of the largest ever U.S. investigation of terrorist financing. According to an affidavit made public this week, the charities gave money to BMI, a New Jersey-based company suspected of transferring funds to three individuals designated terrorists by the U.S. government. Skipping down, the money invested in BMI by the two charities came from a $10 million endowment from unnamed Saudi donors, according to the affidavit by David Kane, an agent with the Bureau of Immigration and Customs Enforcement. While it is not clear whether that money came from the Saudi government, the affidavit quotes a recent CIA report that says the Muslim World League, quote, is largely financed by the government of Saudi Arabia, unquote. And skipping down, in addition to Yassin Qadhi and Musa Abu Marzouk and Mohammed Salah, a member of Hamas, we read, skipping down, the allegations against BMI were made to back up charges against Soleiman Biheri, BMI's founder and president, who was indicted 2 weeks ago on charges of lying to obtain U.S. citizenship. The government alleges that Mr. Biheri also did business with other designated terrorists. Mr. Bieri's laptop computer contained contact information for Galeb Himat, by the way, that's Ali Galeb Himat, a director of Al-Taqwa, and Youssef Nada, members of the Muslim Brotherhood extremist group and people considered terrorists by the U.S. and the United Nations. So another Al-Taqwa link here running through the investigation of Al-Qaeda and related institutions. By the way, the Operation Green Quest raids were precipitated by a lawsuit against Sami Al-Arian that was undertaken by the heroic John Loftus, who also was the point man for the Justice Department's investigation of Nazi war criminals brought into the United States. He resigned his position when he found that many of the individuals who had been instrumental in bringing those into the United States were basically linked to the Reagan administration. And John Loftus has continued his heroic struggle against fascism on up into the 21st century and is now targeting some of the related Islamo-fascist elements whose links go back to the Third Reich and its play for the Earth Island, so to speak, as I've spoken about in so many broadcasts. In a number of programs, and for the record 413 and for the record 417, we looked at overlaps between this very important international financial safe haven, these networks, these offshore tax havens, highly secretive, that have been the vehicle for a variety of sinister machinations, ranging from the Enron, the laundering of money for arms dealers, drug dealers, and terrorists, and also the secreting of corporate funds in order to keep them invisible from the tax authorities of various countries, including the United States. It is these offshore tax havens, places like Switzerland, Liechtenstein, Panama, the Cayman Islands, the Channel Islands, that have proved to be a conduit, sort of an infective milieu, in which many of the terrorist funds have been able to be moved about with impunity. As we looked at in For the Record 413 and For the Record 417, among the individuals and institutions that have utilized these same networks, including the Al-Taqwa complex, Banco del Gotardo and Al-Taqwa, was none other than Saddam Hussein and his Ba'athist regime in Iraq. We're going to take a look at some of these financial, these evidentiary tributaries, again, leading from the Saddam Hussein regime into these offshore financial tax havens that, again, constitute sort of a virtual state, basically, an independent entity overlapping most of the world's power elites and much of the world's power sources, and yet something that is invisible to the investigative authorities to a large extent of various countries. It is in these financial tax havens, these safe financial safe havens, to use the code name of an old World War II Treasury Department investigation, that the overworld meets the underworld, and it is in these financial safe havens that, among others, Saddam Hussein and the Al-Taqwa milieu flow into one another. It's a very important article in the San Francisco Chronicle linking some of Saddam Hussein's capital flight and some of his funding for some of his operations with not only Banco del Gotardo, supplementing what we saw in 413 and 417, but also directly linking the laundering of funds for Saddam Hussein to Youssef Nada and Al-Taqwa. The following is from the San Francisco Chronicle of Saturday, August 16th of 2003. This is an article by Jay Bushinsky of the San Francisco Chronicle Foreign Service headlined, Saddam Hussein can tap billions in dollars, gold, and diamonds. It's subtitled, Resources Hidden All Over World May Finance Resistance. It reads, If Saddam Hussein is indeed orchestrating an anti-American guerrilla campaign from a hideout in Iraq, he can count on billions of dollars stashed in offshore companies to finance hit-and-run operations, investigators say. Estimates of Hussein's hidden wealth range from several billion dollars to $40 billion, and the Bush administration fears that the money could finance not only resistance to the U.S. occupation of Iraq, but terrorist activities as well. Most of Hussein's fortune came from kickbacks on oil sales and smuggled cigarettes and other luxury goods, financial sleuths say. According to the General Accounting Office, the deposed dictator skimmed more than $6.6 billion from the UN-sponsored Oil for Food program. Fresh evidence of Hussein's ability to cover the costs of a protracted guerrilla war emerged in April when U.S. soldiers found some of the laundered money, $656 million in makeshift vaults in a Baghdad neighborhood, and an additional $112 million found in dog kennels. More recently, investigators discovered $4 million in gold bars in June at a Swiss metal processing company called Metalor. The gold had been deposited in the late 1980s by Hussein's half-brother and finance chief, Barzan al-Tikriti, who was captured by U.S. forces April 17th. Nicholas Giannakopoulos, head of the Organized Crime Observatory, or OCO, an independent investigative group in Geneva, says that just may be the tip of the iceberg. He says Hussein's worldwide financial network includes gold and diamonds concealed in such tax havens as Switzerland, Liechtenstein, Panama, and the Bahamas. Paolo Fusi, an Italian reporter who began investigating Hussein's money trail after September 11th and is the author of Saddam's Cashier, says the ousted leader patterned his overseas empire after his political mentor, Egypt's late president Gamal Abdel Nasser. Hussein became an admirer of the Egyptian regime and its leader's methods, said Fusi. Nasser, who ruled Egypt from 1954 until his death in 1970, deposited several million dollars in foreign banks in case he was ever forced into exile by his political enemies. Hussein lived in Cairo after a failed coup forced him to flee Iraq in 1959. Fusi began his inquiry in Geneva by interviewing Arab bankers who led him to Hussein's financial agents. Fusi also developed close ties with Italian judges, financial police, and a Swiss-Italian attorney named Gianluca Boscaro, who reportedly secured evidence of how Hussein hid money around the world after being hired by the family of a man the dictator executed for skimming profits from the network. These sources helped the Italian reporter cut through the web of bank transfers, money laundering, and dummy companies that enabled Hussein to build lavish palaces and buy enough weapons to turn Iraq into a regional military power. According to the Sunday Times of London, hundreds of documents show that Hussein held bank accounts at the Bahamas branch of Switzerland's Banco del Gottardo and channeled millions of dollars to them from arms deals and construction contracts. Bank officials have denied the existence of Hussein accounts and filed a legal complaint in May against unknown persons hoping to identify, quote, those responsible for such serious acts harmful to the bank's name. But Elio Borodori, the subject of Fusi's book, who served as a company trustee for Hussein in Liechtenstein and Switzerland for more than a decade, told reporters in April that he funneled millions in commissions and consultancy fees into a Banco del Gottardo account in Nassau, codenamed Satan, and controlled by a Hussein nephew named Saad al-Mahdi, based in Milan. Borodori, B-O-R-R-O-D-O-R-I, a retired Swiss lawyer, said the financial empire's major entity was the Mediterranean Enterprise Development Projects, or MEDP, which he said had links to 300 other front companies, mainly in Panama and Liechtenstein. Ernst Backes, an international banking expert in Luxembourg, says the network remained active after UN sanctions were imposed on Iraq at the end of the Gulf War in 1991, reaching a financial peak of $31 billion annually. Fusi says an Italian government report showed that one of the network's boldest exploits, the laundering of millions of Iraqi and Kuwaiti dinars, the latter plundered by Iraqi troops during the Gulf War. Quote, "The money was packed into suitcases that were transported by truck from Slovenia to Zurich, where a fair exchange in gold and diamonds was guaranteed by Youssef Nada of Altaqua Bank," unquote, Fusi said. Altaqua Bank was included in President Bush's list of Al-Qaeda money suppliers. Quote, "The neatly packed bills then were shipped to Lebanon and Syria, after which they disappeared," unquote. No matter how desperate his situation may be these days, it is doubtful that an on-the-lam Hussein would run short of funds. Swiss experts believe he secreted away enormous sums on the eve of the U.S.-led April 9th attack. While all the Iraqi funds are now frozen in Switzerland, cash can still be withdrawn from the Hussein Financial Network's numerous accounts in other countries, Liechtenstein, the Bahamas, Panama, and elsewhere. None of these accounts are in his own name, and the withdrawals could be made by agents whose motives would not be known to the banks involved. The money can be hand-carried by couriers to the Iraqi border, possibly through Syria or Turkey, smuggled across, and delivered to Hussein's hideout. Baradari says Hussein's penchant for cruelty extended to his financial emissaries. When he learned that Saad al-Mahdi and a colleague were siphoning off more cash than usual in 1987, he summoned both to Baghdad and had them beheaded. Years later, al-Mahdi's family hired attorney Boscaro to sue Hussein for some of the millions laundered through the offshore companies. The case never went to court because Boscaro, a champion skydiver, was killed last August when the ropes on his hang glider became tangled over Italy's Lake Orta, and he plummeted to the ground. By the way, the death of Boscaro discussed in, for the record, 413 and 417, Altaqua was incorporated in 1988 at his law offices. I would note that these offshore financial safe havens, basically, in which the funds of Altaqua, the Muslim Brotherhood, the Underground Reich, and Saddam Hussein, as well as Al-Qaeda, flow, basically, that these are the wellsprings which nourish much of the malfeasance that takes place in the world. Whether or not Saddam Hussein himself is still alive, I would note that these monies, which these financial flows, which embrace or into which flow the monies of the Muslim Brotherhood, Islamists, Islamo-fascists, as well as those of secular Arabo-fascists like Saddam Hussein, these are the same networks. And whether or not Saddam Hussein is still alive, or whether he's actually directing some of the shenanigans taking place in Iraq, whether he's doing so in partnership with others, such as some of his previous Muslim Brotherhood enemies, is obviously beyond the scope of this broadcast to say. But I would note that the wellsprings for these activities are some of these financial safe havens. Lugano, Switzerland, in addition to being the epicenter for Banco del Gottardo and Bank Altaqua, is also the epicenter for the Thyssen Bornemisza financial operations and industrial operations, which from which the Bush administration drew its profits drew its profits during the Third Reich period and afterward. Once again, as I've said in past broadcasts, I believe that what we're dealing with here is an underground Reich, literally a virtual state present in various geographical states around the world, but without formal geographical borders. It's present in the U.S. It's present on both sides of the Israeli-Palestinian struggle, particularly on the Palestinian and the Saudi side. And it's present around the world as well. It's present in Iraq, and it is present, as I've indicated, in a big, big way in the Bush administration. This is from USA Today. It's by Donna Linewand and Jim Michaels. Records show Iraq was buying forbidden U.S. high-tech goods. Note the wording of this article. Stateline Baghdad. U.S. investigators examining bank and government records here say they have unearthed evidence that high-tech hardware manufactured by at least 30 U.S. companies was sold to Iraq in violation of United Nations sanctions and U.S. customs regulations. Note, this is manufactured by U.S. companies. Officials are trying to determine whether any of those companies knowingly violated the sanctions and U.S. customs laws or unwittingly sold the goods, including computers, laboratory equipment, and aircraft parts, to third parties who then dealt with Saddam Hussein's regime. Investigators declined to name the U.S. companies. Skipping down. Customs agents say they have uncovered correspondence from companies in Germany and South Korea that referred to the United States as, quote, our common enemy, unquote, in apparent efforts to ingratiate themselves with Iraq. Again, my statement that this is quite literally an extension of World War II, that the U.S. is facing an attack from without and extensive subversion within, not unlike France in the run-up to World War II, should be kept in mind. Well, keep this in mind, too, the next time you go to vote in an election. For those people who maintain there's no difference between Al Gore and George Bush, and that was a common refrain from the center-right and in particular the so-called progressive sector, consider the following. From the New York Times of July 31st of 2003, this article is titled Links of Saudis to Charities Come Under Senate Review. It's by Timothy L. O'Brien and Don Van Natta, Jr. Skipping down. Today's hearing will include testimony from Rick Newcomb, head of the Office of Foreign Assets Control at the Treasury Department, which administers economic and trade sanctions to further national security. Mr. Newcomb is expected to testify that former Vice President Al Gore arranged two meetings with Saudi officials in 1999 and 2000 that threatened Saudi Arabia with severe sanctions if they did not staunch the flow of terrorist money from the country. So according to Mr. Newcomb, in 1999 and 2000, Al Gore met with Saudi officials and threatened severe trade sanctions if they didn't stop funding terrorism. At least one. I mean, obviously there are many major differences between Al Gore and George Bush, including the fact that Al Gore didn't have any business connections to the Bin Laden family or to the Saudis, and in fact, Al Gore was doing what Bush and company should have done and didn't do. WFMU is archiving the For the Record programs, more recent programs streaming and on Real Audio at wfmu.org/Dave Emery. Older programs available at a longer URL linked to both the WFMU.org /Dave Emery website and to the Real Audio-equipped Spitfire website as well. Spitfire stocks the various tapes that I've done over the years. You can visit their Real Audio-equipped website at spitfirelist.com. That's www.spitfirelist.com. And in the For the Record section, there are long annotated descriptions of the For the Record programs. Spitfire has all of these CD programs and lectures that I've done over the years available on CD. I do not get money from that arrangement. This concludes side two of For the Record program number 423, titled I've Got a Secret, update on September 11th and related matters. This is being recorded on September 8th of 2003. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.